B-Pod Studios.
This is WWE Superstar Roman Reigns, and you are listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley, two great members of the Kowloon crew. Mike, remember, this is Jay Stu's yard, brother.
Money in the Bank is in the books, and your kind of surprise winners, in my opinion, are Asuka and Otis. Did not see this coming. So the finish for Asuka winning was by knocking Baron Corbin off the top of the ladder. Asuka, I thought, had the best strategy of all. Hits one big move and then runs to the elevator. Asuka's issue, she got off the elevator and tried to use the stairs. But, you know, I don't know if Titan Tower goes all the way to the roof, but who knows? And the other winner was Otis, who couldn't climb the ladder because he's 330 pounds, but got the briefcase because AJ and Baron Corbin tied to pull it off of the hook up top. Corbin got hit with a guitar by Elias, which forced Corbin to let it go. AJ fumbled the case, and Otis got control of the case. So Otis was declared the winner. It was a very creative finish, but the underlying tone of fat shaming I did not like as part of this match. But I thought overall the match was really good. Really good, really entertaining. Baron Corbin committed murder twice, and nobody blinked an eye because he threw Rey Mysterio off the roof. He threw Aleister Black off the roof. And it only took 15 minutes to get to the top of Titan Tower. Mike Riley, what were your thoughts about the Money in the Bank briefcase mini movie at Titan Tower?
Yeah, you know, and like you said, mini movie, if that's going to be the case here for the foreseeable future with pay-per-views, give me more mini movies. That was fantastic. We saw it at the start of WrestleMania, the Boneyard match, the Firefly Funhouse. And yeah, here we are here in a post-production scenario with the WWE Money in the Bank. The fact that it was a 2-hour, 24-minute or 34-minute pay-per-view, I am fine with that. No issue with that. So I thought it was really good for what they worked with. You had intergender in that Money in the Bank main event there. You even had a great appearance by Brother Love. That was hysterical. John Laurinaitis was also in there. I didn't like the Doink the Clown thing. Paul Heyman was there. But that was some good stuff. We saw the inside of Titan Tower. They thought outside the box. And you know what? For everything that's going on right now, kudos to WWE doing a good job here. Now, as far as Otis winning, I a little surprised about that, but I like the direction where they're going there for him because, you know, we don't know when everything is going to get back to normal here. That could be the surprise, obviously, when Otis is to cash in or if he does even succeed at doing that. He has a whole year for that. So that's a great opportunity right there for him to build on that character. As far as Asuka winning, I didn't pick her to win. I thought it would be Shayna, but I get the reasoning behind it because Asuka and Becky Lynch work well together. You can save a Shayna Baszler match against Becky down the line. They know each other so well. And if they're going to do that in the immediate future, it makes sense. So I was not too surprised with the Asuka one for the reasoning behind it.
Unless Asuka is going to challenge on SmackDown.
Well, yeah, I just got a feeling that she's going to go for Becky because I think she has a better working relationship with Becky in the ring.
Just from like thinking a little bit, I mean, they're either going to wait on these cash-ins until there's fans.
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
that's
yeah.
what they should do.
Yep.
Or they're going to do called shots. Mm-hmm. So Otis is like, oh, I have the briefcase. I already want Braun Strowman for the next pay-per-view, although I don't think that's the direction that they're going.
Right.
But I could see Asuka being like, okay, I couldn't beat Becky earlier this year, so I'm going to go for Bayley, or I'm going to go for Sasha Banks, or I'm going to go for whoever ends up being the SmackDown Women's Champion at the time. But I do think that they're going to wait for fans because that's part of the experience. And if we get to a point where we don't have fans, and I don't think we're going to have fans until at least the Rumble, or at least that time period in 2021. Well, or at least a good amount of fans.
Yeah, but the news this week, Mayor Walsh, not good.
Yeah, I mean, SummerSlam is for all intent and purpose canceled.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
The mayor doesn't want anything before Labor Day.
Yeah.
Big gatherings of group, our 4th of July celebration is canceled, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So SummerSlam pushed back a year, maybe not happening. We'll see. I think that's the whole point of the briefcase now, is to get the crowd, to pop the crowd.
Oh yeah.
And so you should wait on that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah,
I do wonder with Otis if he tries and gives Mandy the contract.
Oh yeah, makes sense.
And Mandy backdoors her way into a championship match, which I think would be great. But I'm also into this Mandy Rose Otis storyline. I just think it's fun. It's so simple. And it's just like one of them is going to turn on the other one. And you think it's going to be Mandy because that's how we've been conditioned in life, is that the beautiful girl always turns on the not so beautiful guy.
Right. Beauty and the Beast right there. And
yeah, and it's another opportunity for Vince McMahon to make a fat joke, which is right. What the theme of this match was.
Essentially, yeah. But Otis, like, I mean, what a year for him he's had. I mean, he just no longer on the tag team. He's now on his own. So good little push there for that, being the Money in the Bank winner. We'll see what happens. So much possibility, like you said, for a potential Mandy Rose backdoor scenario. But they have a lot of good storyline potential here going forward.
So a few spots in the midst of this match. I liked AJ being haunted by The Undertaker.
Yep.
That was fun.
Big tease, too, I think.
And when Aleister Black closed the door, I'm like, oh, AJ's eliminated from the match. But he came back, and it makes sense because Aleister Black is a darker character. So yep. He would be okay locking AJ in there. I wonder if they're going to do something with Brock and Otis, because Heyman got food thrown at him by Otis. And I thought, oh, well, that's an easy program for Brock to come back to, mm-hmm. is with Otis. And maybe Brock comes back, Otis has to put up the Money in the Bank contract, and they get the contract to Brock. Just okay. Thinking out loud here.
Okay. So Brock and Otis. So that would mean you put Brock on SmackDown.
It doesn't matter. I mean, I assume Brock, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Brock would probably go back to Raw, and that would be your rematch with Drew McIntyre.
Yeah. Okay.
Just again, thinking out loud.
Okay. Okay.
Because I don't see Otis winning the world title, but no, stranger things have happened. Or Brock can come back, be on SmackDown. He beats Braun or Bray Wyatt or whoever ends up that champion. But just thinking out loud, like, you've got a seed planted there for Brock Lesnar to come back to avenge Paul Heyman getting food in the face.
Yeah.
And maybe that's an idea out there.
Thank God they started a food fight there too, because Paul Heyman throwing the strawberry back into that salad bowl there. Ooh, not good during this time right now. So good thing they started that food fight.
Well, we all know you don't make friends with salad. Otis doing the yes spot off one spot of the elevator was funny. The brother love
awesome
spot was funny. I liked the idea of Dana Brooke and that false finish winning the briefcase in the Money in the Bank conference room. I knew it wasn't the finish because they said clearly that the case was on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like the idea that Dana's like, oh, this is a scavenger hunt and I found the case.
Right. And then how about Vince McMahon, too, in his office? AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan are out there, too. Get to see Vince's office. Well, if it is his office, I don't know. I'm pretty sure.
Oh yeah, that's his office. Because if you remember, Beyond the Mat,
dinosaur.
Yeah, the dinosaur.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So I mean, that was pretty cool too. And just so much inside.
It looked like Vince said never used hand sanitizer like that before. It was a little weird.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely put all the social distancing, the best thing they could do into it here, the precautions, rather, of what we're going through in this pandemic. So that was pretty funny. Some good spots, though.
Yeah, there was some fun stuff for the mini movie.
Can you imagine if this were in front of a crowd, though, the pop Bruce Pritchard would have gotten with Brother Love, like that Raw 25 one when he came out in the locker room. Oh, that would have been an unbelievable pop from the crowd.
Oh yeah, we all love Bruce. We all love Bruce now. I mean, maybe working with him is different, but I'm a Bruce Pritchard guy. So
bring him on.
And we can all thank Conrad, the mortgage guy from Alabama, for that.
That's right.
For making Bruce likable.
Made him a legend. Yep.
Exactly. So again, Asuka wins the women's Money in the Bank case. Otis wins the men's Money in the Bank case.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of working backwards a little bit in this pay-per-view. The Drew McIntyre Seth Rollins match, I thought was good for what it was.
Thank God Drew won.
Yes. I knew you were going to say that.
Thank
you hate
God.
Seth Rollins.
Yeah, out on him. Out. But that was a good match. That was a good match.
Yeah, it was a good match. I thought Seth got his bell wrong on the finish because when he went down, he either hit his head on the canvas or he took a headbutt or something. Just because of the way that when McIntyre covered him, his head was a little bit off the canvas, like he was trying to figure out where he was.
Right.
So I hope Seth Rollins is okay. Mm-hmm. Not like WWE listens to medical protocols or anything, but you know, maybe they will on a concussion. Who knows?
Yep.
I thought it was interesting that Drew McIntyre seems to be working under Ring of Honor honor code. He extended his hand and shook Rollins' hand. So, and they put over on commentary, oh, well, he's being a leader here. Mm-hmm. Which I don't know if that's the right direction to go with Drew McIntyre as this clean cut, classy, always smiling baby face. I don't know that I love that. He cracked a joke during one of the pre-tape interviews before the match that I didn't necessarily love. And that's to say that his promo work, I thought, attacking Seth Rollins this past week on Monday was really good and using all of the criticisms that we have levied at Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
So I thought that was good. I thought that was interesting. Mike, what'd you make of this Rollins-McIntyre stuff?
Well, like you said, the handshake there, that's an interesting thing. It's just trying to build up, I think, more of that baby face for Drew McIntyre to show he's a good sport. It definitely does open the door a little bit here for, you know, this to continue, as you mentioned, with the whole thing of what we saw on Raw this past week. But for Seth Rollins, what I think here, you could go one of two ways that, okay, I did shake his hand, and you may tease the fact that he might turn face for a little bit, but then all of a sudden, boom, go right back to that heel, and that keeps that rival going for a little bit. This storyline between the two, another shot at the title, Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. So that possibility is right there with that handshake, because he did shake his hand. He did do it. I mean, it's on camera. I mean, whether you like it or not, Seth Rollins did say, yeah, thank you, Drew. And then so easy to backstab him again and go right after him next month in pay-per-view. So good matchup.
So McIntyre retains the WWE Championship over Seth Rollins. Mm-hmm. Braun Strowman also retains the Universal Championship over just Bray Wyatt, not the fiend Bray Wyatt, but just normal wearing a fancy sweater Bray Wyatt.
Mm-hmm.
This felt like it was just to build to a rematch where the fiend comes out and then the fiend regains the title or doesn't regain the title. I'm not sure, but it seemed like kind of a way for them to kind of get out of the match.
Yeah.
Like they didn't want to put the title on Bray, but they wanted him in the match, and putting normal Bray out there is just like, okay, well, even though he beat the Miz, but it was just a little different.
But then the mask.
Yeah. So the sequence at the end, Braun is running around ringside. He knocks Bray Wyatt into the barricade. Wyatt recovers, knocks Strowman off the apron. Strowman stands up. He's wearing the black sheep mask. Wyatt is essentially bragging that he finally got Strowman under control.
Yep.
They hugged. The puppets appeared at ringside, celebrated, which is interesting that puppets are allowed at ringside, but other wrestlers are not allowed at ringside. But that's a story for another time. Strowman essentially pushed Wyatt away, stomped the mask, power slammed him for the win. And then after the match, the visions of the fiend came on the screen. So we think that the setup is for the fiend coming after Strowman for the next pay-per-view, because they got to stretch it out. And then it's a matter of, does the fiend get the title back? And maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I don't know necessarily that he needs the title. But I think everybody wants him to have the title because he's the most interesting character, at least on SmackDown.
Yeah.
If not across all three brands. And there's an argument to be made there.
This was my favorite match of the night, actually, the Strowman-Wyatt match. They both work so well together, and we saw a good sequence of maneuvers between the two there. And again, for what we did see with the mask, he had the hug on Bray Wyatt there and then, you know, just buried him at the end. But you're right, it does set up the Fiend because we did get the, you know, the sweater Bray Wyatt there, which I was really disappointed about at the beginning. But then reading into it more during the match, like, okay, we'll get the Fiend either later or at some point down the line. So I really like this match a lot. It was a good win for Braun Strowman, and it just shows that he is, you know, he's going to be the guy to try to conquer all evil here and build up that Fiend character even more. I think the Bray Wyatt character, you know, it might be on the way out sooner than later, and I don't like the not the Fiend, but Bray Wyatt. I mean, he hasn't had, I know he did, the Fiend did lose to Goldberg and so forth, but you know, if they want to build up more of a prominent dominating superstar to show what he can do, then you might just see more of the Fiend over Bray Wyatt in the ring itself. No more Bray Wyatt sweater guy in the ring, maybe just on the Funhouse, but that's it. No more of the Bray Wyatt in the ring, get the Fiend strictly in the ring.
Well, I think the Bray Wyatt is to give, because the character is bipolar. I don't know if that's the proper medical diagnosis, but that's the idea, is that, or he's schizophrenic, or there's a mental health disorder there. I'm not sure
what's proper.
That's been the character since he came back and created the Fiend and beat Finn Balor and just kind of ran the gamut. And then when he came out and defended the Universal title as just Bray Wyatt against The Miz, we were kind of shook a little bit. But I think that's you never know which character you're going to get, which, you know, that was at one point the glory of Three Faces of Foley was,
right,
he's Dude Love one night, then he's Mankind, then he's Cactus Jack, and, you know, and he loses all of them, which, you know, obviously, that didn't happen because he beat The Undertaker a whole bunch of times and he won. But that's a whole nother thing. But
another story. Yeah.
It does look like that they are building towards the Fiend versus Braun Strowman, and we'll see where that goes. And maybe that's going to end up being a pre-tape, another mini movie pre-tape, and that's how they get the title off of Braun. Or maybe they just have Bray Wyatt, the Fiend, beat Braun, but it's not for the title. I don't know. I don't think that Bray Wyatt needs the title. I think he's fine without it.
Right, and nothing really, you know, significant changed hands here since WrestleMania for the, well, obviously, because Drew McIntyre won at Mania, Braun Strowman and Bayley retained at WrestleMania too, so your singles are all stayed in place, you know, and nothing changed, so you got a little time to build this up.
Yeah, and you know, just again working backwards through the pay-per-view, Bayley defeated Tamina. I don't think anybody thought Tamina was going to win. We're kind of surprised that she was in this match, unless there was going to be a major upset. And I'm sure that Vince has a special place for Tamina. Tamina seems like we've interacted with her. She seems like a sweet enough gal.
Yeah.
But I don't know necessarily that this match fit anywhere to progress anything. The pre-match interview, Sasha Banks kind of gave the interviewer kind of a look when the interviewer was trying to stir some tension between Sasha and Bayley. They did a little bit of the tension, so the build towards Sasha Banks and Bayley having a match continues.
Yeah.
You know, that was probably the plan for Boston and SummerSlam, which
it's in jeopardy. Serious jeopardy.
So it was kind of a nothing, you know, the build is for Bayley and Sasha, and it's how long do we keep it going? Interesting thing that I didn't really think of until commentary said it was Bayley's essentially been the SmackDown champion for a year.
Yep.
Which is there are hiccups in there, obviously, but that's a pretty good run.
That was a year ago. Yeah, I think it was a year ago this week, to be exact.
May 19th.
There you go. So, oh, and by the way, right in front of your face there, Jay Stu, right?
Yeah.
The greatest passion of all time.
One of the most horrific nights.
No. Oh, no, that was a hell of a cash.
You know what's funny is, like, objectively speaking, and I was saying that I've said this to a bunch of people actually within the last few days.
Yeah.
Objectively speaking, last year's Money in the Bank was pretty loaded and a pretty good show.
It was. Brock Lesnar coming back after?
You had Kevin Owens versus Kofi. You had AJ versus Seth Rollins. You had an actual cash in. You know, Lacey Evans and Charlotte against Becky was just to get to the Bayley cash in. That women's opener was pretty good. The Shane McMahon Miz match was pretty good. You had a kind of a weird finish to the Rey Mysterio Samoa Joe match, if I remember correctly, or Rey had to give the title back or something like that, if memory serves. But that was a loaded show, and it goes to, like, why is Becky not on the show? Why is Charlotte not on the show?
Yeah.
And, like, look, I'm happy because the show was 2.5 hours.
Yeah. No issue with that.
And I think that that's smart with what they're doing, because they're doing shorter matches for the network, which isn't paying as many bills as the TV shows are. Mm-hmm. But also, with the lack of a live audience, they have to do things a little bit differently. And I think that they know that that they need the crowd to do live matches. So they're keeping the stuff that they can control shorter. So, like, they can go 2 hours and 30 minutes on a pay-per-view because the pay-per-view companies need time to re-rack everything. And on TV, they can't do that. They have to give them 3 hours of programming on Monday and two on Wednesday and two on Friday night. Thank you, Bruce Pritchard, right? Thank you, Paul Heyman. Thank you, Vince.
Yeah, they got to figure it out with the television. Why? I want to say one observation. The opening match was the Fatal 4-Way Tag Match. And, you know, after seeing AEW this week back at Daly's Place with, you know, staff from AEW outside the ring, and not that we haven't seen that before with, you know, just the talent, but more staff and more people out there. In an outdoor setting and so forth with actual sunlight and all that. The Fatal 4-Way match tonight, you didn't have people in the crowd, but you had so many bodies in the ring, and you heard all the trash talk there that just silenced everything from the outside that you usually would get. And I think that was a brilliant spot to put that match first, because if you had a match, say the Bayley Tamina match to start the show, I think it would have started off really slow, and we would not have had the same sort of hype going into this here. We have that trash talk and just to kill the dead sound from the outside. Good job by putting that tag match at the very first spot tonight.
Yeah, and you know, the tag match was good. It would have been better with the Usos in there, but the Usos are hurt, or one of them's hurt. But it's just kind of like, oh, ho hum, the New Day continue on. I want to see Big E get a real singles chance.
Well,
because I think Big E's got the promo skills, he's got the size, and he can be a world champion on any of the brands.
Yep,
man, and maybe carry it for a little while.
Wait till, you know, I could see him, you know, him and Braun Strowman, him and a Drew McIntyre be an awesome match. You know, as soon as, why am I blanking? Not Kofi. Help me out here, Jimmy.
Xavier Woods.
Thank you. Yeah. As soon as he's back healthy, I could totally see that happening. So,
but Big E should be in the, because he can do it all. It just makes sense to me, as opposed to, oh, ho hum, the New Day are tag champs. And, like, they shouldn't have taken off of Miz and Morrison, but, you know, Miz had a temperature one day and they weren't sure. And, you know, he's got two kids at home. So, like, I get it. So the other kind of note that I have from the Money in the Bank pay-per-view is R-Truth. What a great entertainer. Yep. Rapping with nobody in the stands.
Yep.
Just great work. And then later on, he wants to get his 24/7 title back from Tom Brady, not Rob Gronkowski.
He's going to sack Tom Brady, but that just is the tease of the century, and just, it's so going to happen. after a Tampa Bay Buccaneers game in Tampa Bay this year, post-game locker room, R-Truth goes in there, you know, hits Gronk from behind, pins him to get the 24-7 title. It's only a matter of time, and that is going to make everything explode. You know Vince McMahon and Roger Goodell have a backdoor deal on this. It's going to work out well together, and Gronk is all in on it too, especially with Tom Brady there. Huh, this is a perfect scenario for Vince McMahon at WWE right there.
There's a scenario that somebody much smarter than me thought of.
What's that?
That Tampa gets SummerSlam, right? And maybe they get WrestleMania a few years down the road, but they get SummerSlam this year because Boston can't host it, doesn't want to host it, whatever the case may be. And you have Rob Gronkowski wrestle his one match. Tom Brady's at ringside. They get the buzz of the Buccaneers. They get all that promotion, all that fun stuff. And that's kind of how it works out, because Gronk was going to wrestle at SummerSlam this year.
Right.
I truly believe that. I don't know that as fact, but it feels like that's how it was trending. And because Gronk would have been the New England Patriots, Boston, and then, you know, he gets traded. But I don't think the wrestling fans, or maybe they would boo him because he requested a trade. I don't know. It would have been interesting to see, but I think Gronk was working SummerSlam this year.
Friend of mine who may or may not work for the Patriots / Revolution sent me a text on April 21st when Gronk signed with Tampa Bay. Conspiracy theory: Gronk is coming back to football because SummerSlam won't go on as planned, so no need for his appearance. So I think that. I think you're onto something though with the Tampa Bay thing, though, James. I would do that too. So
I would buy that.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else for Money in the Bank, Mike?
You know, the short, less is more pay-per-view for the time-wise, great. I think it was a good show. I really enjoyed the ladder match at the end, like I said, for both of them there, the men's and women's. And, you know, as I said at the start of the show, if that's how it's going to be for the foreseeable future, give me more movies like this. Great job by the production team. And I love the music underneath, too. I didn't like it at first, that Boneyard match. I'm like, oh, no. But it really grew on me. And now I'm just like really all in on it. So great job, WWE production team.
Suspense music. It's
yeah.
It has, if done properly, it can add a lot to it.
Yep.
So Mike, do you have a lightning round for us that is now called the Riley round?
Riley round. Let's go, baby. You ready? Here we go.
Yeah.
Okay. who is the best heel in wrestling right now?
MJF?
Yeah, that's what AEW. I said too. That's what I said too. I mean, The Fiend is like a very close 1A, but MJF, I mean, he's just awesome on the microphone. Look what he did this week too. His promo was awesome. I keep saying too, by the way, AEW, just the best shows since the pandemic. This past week was tough to top. I mean, really cool with the Jaguar Stadium too. But MJF though, even on Twitter, like he's awesome. He's just a dick. So true heel. I'm going to go with him. All right. One deceased wrestler you wish you could have met.
Rowdy Piper.
Rowdy Piper. Okay.
I talked to him on the phone one time.
Really?
He was doing his book tour, and VB, who was hosting RKO late night, had him on as a guest. So at the time I was doing late nights. And so VB knew I was a wrestling fan because everybody knows I'm a wrestling fan.
Yep.
And VB was like, oh, I'm having Rowdy Piper on. And I'm like, oh, cool. Can I talk to him off the air real quick? Nice. I just said hello, said I loved his book. And he was what's the proper term that I can use? He may have been under the influence, which was a common theme for him. but he was entertaining, the classic worker's worker. So Rowdy Piper and actually he was supposed to do an appearance in Webster.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was going to go to that appearance, but he passed away.
Yep.
And, so the day that Rowdy Piper passed away, I was in New Bedford at a Ric Flair appearance for a show that had Taven and Bennett on it, had Bob Evans on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I was supposed to interview Ric Flair that day.
Yep.
And I went through the meet and greet line, and when Flair was done with the meet and greet line, I was supposed to go back and talk to him for 10 minutes or whatever the promoter was going to give me time for.
Right.
And Rowdy Piper died, and I'm like, well, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I'm going to respect the man's privacy. This is one of his best friends passing away. Sure. Like, I'm not pushing it. I'm going to let him do his thing. Yeah. So Rowdy Piper is my answer.
Mike, that's a good yours? One. That's a good one. You know, I always say to people, three people I wish I had met before they died. Andre the Giant, Gorilla Monsoon, but really the Macho Man. I really would have loved to met the Macho Man. Loved him growing up, and you know, couldn't believe when he passed away too on that car accident there. But big Savage fan. I mean, just him and Hogan too. Late 80s, the Mega Powers, and even going at it too, WrestleMania 5. And just Savage as an Intercontinental Champion in the late 80s, and he stuck around in the WWF for a little bit before, you know, they had a little blow up there on the Vince McMahon and they never really patched things up. And I did love the Macho Man big time. So he'd be my top guy to meet right there, Macho Man. So that's the one I'd like to meet the most for the deceased.
I dig it.
You dig it. And last one, we're coming into t-shirt season, James. And I know you're a big wrestling t-shirt guy. So what is your favorite wrestling t-shirt you currently own? Maybe in your current rotation. How's that?
So it's, I think for comfort level, it's my Macho Man shirt.
Really? Yeah.
Ironically enough, because it's just, it's a light. It breathes well, things like that. I'm 6'4" and, you know, 270. So like I need stuff that breathes well. So I would probably say my Macho Man shirt. Second, it's a darker color with the purple outline with the Macho Man logo and the glasses and everything.
Yep.
So I would say that one. There's a Jake Roberts one that's DDT that I really like.
Do you own it?
Yeah, I do own it.
Okay. Yeah.
I wore it when I went to Disney a few years ago. Yep. I wore it around Universal Studios and I got compliments on it. I was in the Harry Potter store down there, and the place was packed, like capacity. It's supposed to only hold 300. There were like 400 people in there.
Nice.
And I wore it. I was just trying to like stay out of the way. So I like hopped one of the railings to get some breathing room.
Yeah.
And the clerk was like, "Oh, you shouldn't do that, but I like your shirt. So get out of here."
I love it. Yeah.
And the Simpsons character that I took a picture with also kind of like pointed and gave a thumbs up to it.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, that's cool.
So and probably third on that list, and this is the Disney story.
Yeah.
Is I have a Charlotte Flair shirt, and it says "Do it with Flair," and the person dressed up as Mickey Mouse complimented it and took a picture like pointing at the back of my shirt, which I think I've shared before.
I've seen that. Yes. That's a good picture you have. Yes.
So I like that. The person dressed as Mickey Mouse popped for the Charlotte Flair shirt.
Nice. I love it.
Mike, what do you got?
The DDT one. I got that when I met Jake back in November too. I love that one, but also I'd have to say Undertaker Casket Club one. It's got a picture of the rest in peace, but the casket's like going diagonal. And also my John Cena Hustle, Loyalty, Respect in red, white, and blue. So t-shirt season, wrestling ones. And you know what? As we said about a month ago with all the layoffs, go and support your favorite wrestler and buy one of their t-shirts, right? So we want to help them out too during this time.
You know, the John Cena shirt that I love is the 8-bit character one, the one with the Mike Tyson style.
Sure.
Finn Balor likes that one too. When we were in Worcester. Finn Balor complimented me. He's like, "Oh, I love that shirt. I have one myself."
Love it. Love it. It's awesome.
Speaking of which, is that it for your Riley round?
I'm done.
Okay. Have you watched the Undertaker special?
So I know you directed it to me earlier today. It is Mother's Day. I had no time to watch the whole thing.
No worries.
I'm gonna watch it after this, so I'm very excited. Did you watch it?
No, I did watch it.
Okay.
It's awesome. You will enjoy it. You will enjoy it a lot.
I'm going to put it on right after this.
I just asked because you're an Undertaker honk.
Oh yeah.
And you'll, so there's an interesting detail in the documentary, and it's not a big enough where I feel like I'm ruining the documentary for you.
Go ahead. Say it. Say it. Go ahead.
But there was the report after his WrestleMania match in New Orleans where Brock Lesnar defeated The Undertaker and ended the streak, mm-hmm. that Vince McMahon went to the hospital with The Undertaker. That is true. The other person in the car was Brock Lesnar.
Wow.
Brock Lesnar went to the hospital with Vince McMahon to see The Undertaker.
No kidding. And that was after a time where they had that little confrontation at the UFC.
So it leads me to think that Undertaker and Brock were working.
They're tight. And, yeah.
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 And so that's why I bring up that detail is, and the more and more it feels like Brock Lesnar is also in the position where he's a mercenary for money.
Yeah.
But I think he's got enough respect of the room, mm-hmm. and he gives out the respect that I just think there's a lot of respect there. And I don't think that fans understand or notice it unless they're watching these documentaries.
And when you think about that too, with The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, I mean, sure, over time, Brock, you look at it, he probably has had the upper hand on him in the matches they've had. But for The Undertaker to want to work with a guy like Brock Lesnar and to agree to that, WrestleMania 30, SummerSlam 2015. But if you go even further back, Undertaker was the last entrant in the 2003 Royal Rumble. And who eliminates him to win the Royal Rumble? Brock Lesnar.
Yep.
So that's a lot of parallels like that right there. If he's going to, you know, have that respect for you, that's a big thing for the Taker on your side. I got to ask you, I'm sure you've seen the Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary, right?
Yes.
Yep. What do you think? Okay. I know it's only one episode, but a lot of people tweeting at me today saying the Undertaker one is better than the Jordan Last Dance. That's just one episode so far. What do you say?
So I think that might be because wrestling people are tweeting at you and there's a bias towards one side versus the other.
Yeah.
The Jordan documentary to me has been a little bit too long.
Yeah.
And they have to set up backstories and things like that. And the Undertaker one, we're all wrestling fans. We all have the network. It's assumed that we know the history of the Undertaker, even though they try to put it into 5 minutes.
Right.
So the ESPN one is telling the person who didn't live through the Michael Jordan era, all the backstories of it.
True.
I think it's been good. I think they didn't need to spread it across 10 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a lot from, you know, even the time he was drafted and now we're seeing the gambling stuff he's dealt with and his father.
You'll see when, you know, we're taping this in the middle of them doing episode 7 and 8. Yeah. But in episode 7, they run through him playing baseball and they shoot down the conspiracy theory that he was suspended because of gambling. Mm-hmm. Episode 8 goes into the Gary Payton stuff, which is the highlight, and just Gary Payton running his mouth is just good entertainment.
Well, they'll shoot that down because, you know, that is Jordan's production company behind this. So
which is kind of surprising that they even have mentioned the gambling stuff, but I guess that they had to.
You got
just so that they can shoot it down, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Put their own twist on it. Yeah.
And if you're friends with that's not how I wanted to word it. If you remember Terry Francona right. was the Red Sox manager, won 2 World Series championships. Mm-hmm. He was Michael Jordan's manager in AA.
That's right. The Birmingham Barons.
And you'll see Tito during episode 7, I think it is, which is airing tonight.
And the Miz's dad plays cards with Terry Francona all the time.
Yep.
There you go. Yep.
And I'm sure Tito loses a lot of money because Tito is not very good at gambling. Except he. So for those who don't know, when I worked at EEI, Terry Francona was a weekly guest on the Dale and Holly show. Mm-hmm. Terry was always great to me. I've gambled with Terry.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't think that if I was burning on fire, I don't think he'd put me out. nowadays because I work with Mike Felger, who he despises.
Well, yeah.
But there was a time where I had a pretty good relationship with Terry Francona, so I'm a Terry Francona honk. You know, greatest manager of my Red Sox lifetime.
And then, yeah, that's a fact.
Yeah. Match of the week, Mike Riley. I have mine. And I just want to let people know, I'm going to try to do older matches.
Okay.
Because I think that the era of, you know, when I was growing up, mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of quality there that still holds together to this day. So with that being said, February 25th, 1990, WCW Wrestle War 90. It's the Rock and Roll Express against the Midnight Express. It's one of my favorite tag team matches of all time because this was the first time that I saw the Rock and Roll Express against the Midnight Express. And maybe they've had better matches throughout their history. There's a Mid-South match that I've never seen that I'm told is the best that they've ever had from like 85.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't had it because it was a house show in middle of nowhere, Louisiana, right?
Yep.
But this was the first time that I saw the Rock and Roll Express against the Midnight Express. There's a ref boxing spot in the match that cracks me up every single time. So this is a match that I think you should go back and watch. It's excellent tag team wrestling, just fun stuff. Good simple match, and go through the catalog of the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Jim Ross and Terry Funk on the commentary are great.
Nice.
And just one little interesting note about this pay-per-view. It's a 7-match card and a really good card top to bottom. It was actually the first WCW pay-per-view that I ever watched live.
Mm-hmm.
The main event was Lex Luger against Ric Flair for the title, which was supposed to be Sting's big win at the time, but Sting blew out his knee and they had to push that back. 5 of the 7 matches on this show were tag team matches. I don't know that
all that's tag happened. Team 5 of 7.
5 of 7 matches were tag
Holy
team.
Cow. That's insane.
Yeah, and I noticed it when I was watching the Rock and Roll match, and then just kind of was like skimming through the card, and I'm like, wow, this is interesting. The Steiners versus the Andersons were on that show. The Road Warriors were in a street fight against Mark Calloway and a mystery partner who was supposed to be Dan Spivey or Sid Vicious, and they just bolted the company. Wow. So just kind of a, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. 5 of 7 matches were tag team matches.
And it was 2-on-2 for the tag team, not like a 4-on-4. Okay. Survivor Series, anything like that. Wow. Interesting. Yep. That's cool. Nice.
So right. Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express, Wrestle War 90.
Nice. Okay. Good stuff. All right. So this past weekend, we lost Little Richard. And he performed America the Beautiful at WrestleMania 10. Now, I know before leading up to WrestleMania, James actually picked this as his match, Bret Hart versus Owen Hart. So I'm like, I can't look at that one. So let me think of something else in Madison Square Garden. That's where it happened. I went to SummerSlam 1991, Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect. Now, Little Richard was not there, but I just wanted to do the building in honor of him and all that. But this was, I think, back when the Intercontinental title meant something. Remember that title? Gorilla Monsoon, Bobby Heenan, and Roddy Piper, all on commentary. I didn't realize how damn annoying Coach was. Remember Coach, the manager there for Mr. Perfect?
Oh, the guy with the whistle, yeah.
Yeah, and exactly. You heard his darn whistle so much outside the ring. Oh, it was so annoying. But this was, I think, one of the best matches of Bret Hart and actually Mr. Perfect's career. Yeah. But Bret Hart had a lot of good matches too. But just back and forth, Bret and Mr. Perfect had a really good sequence there. Coach, the real turning point at the end of it, Coach comes up onto the apron. Bret Hart goes over to knock him down. He gets his legs caught between the ropes, and Mr. Perfect takes advantage, kicking him to the ropes. They have a back and forth, close two count. Bret ends up getting the sharpshooter on him at the end there. Is it just a good match? I think you'd really enjoy it. It's a classic Intercontinental title match when it really mattered. Mr. Perfect, a great heel, one of the best heels of all time, and I think one of the greatest theme songs of all time too. SummerSlam, 1991. But again, Little Richard wasn't there. I just had to pick that Madison Square Garden one because that's where WrestleMania 10 happened.
Yeah, that SummerSlam match is a favorite of mine because I'm a Bret Hart honk, and
yep,
just really a classic. I almost said a perfect match, pun intended. But I think the backstory was Kurt Hennig was having some health issues at the time, and that was almost somebody else. It almost wasn't Bret, but I can't remember who it almost was.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and Mr. Perfect was the Intercontinental Champion going in, yes.
Yep.
And Bret did win, yeah. His parents were there, too, of course, yep. Like they were every match.
And Bret couldn't get them better seats. He had to put them all the way back there.
Yeah, what the heck was that about?
So I recently watched Survivor Series with the throw in the towel match with Bob Backlund where Bret loses the WWF title.
Yep.
And Stu and Helen are ringside because they're part of the finish, right?
Mm-hmm.
They do a long shot and they show Bret's wife and his kids sitting in like first row of the balcony. And I'm like, you can't get better seats than that. Like, come on, what are we doing here?
Well, the year before at the Boston Garden, they're right behind Vince and Bobby Heenan. And that and that 94 pay-per-view, that's where we got robbed of not having Bobby Heenan on commentary. Can you imagine him on that one there for the Bret Owen turn? Owen just killing his chance at winning the title, having Backlund win. That would have been awesome. He was already in WCW.
Bobby Heenan was so good. He was so good.
The best.
He couldn't get away with all the stuff that he got away with then. But
oh, no. But it's just unbelievable. Hysterical. Amazing.
Before we wrap up, Mike, just a few things. You're talking about like supporting wrestlers, going to pro wrestling tees and buying their t-shirts if you can, or going to their social media page and maybe sending them a message that they have like a mug or, you know, a pin or something like that and trying to support them. Like there are some wrestlers who have Patreon pages.
Yep.
Donovan Dijak has one and he's an NXT guy. But you know, little things like that to help wrestlers if you can. A few things, like I know mental health is important to both of us.
Yeah.
One of my friends has a NewtonCenterTherapy.com. If you're having some mental health issues, there are other mental health places, but you know, that's a friend. Okay. A friend of ours, Phil Castanetti.
Yeah.
His small business is still open, Sports World up in Saugus. He's on limited hours, but Sports World USA, I think if you put it in your Google machine.
Yep.
Kowloon is still running, although they're going to be on break for a week. And I know Andy's not a small business, but he's a friend. And, you know, I would hate to see a virus knock out such a legendary business and a friend of ours. On the video, Mike is wearing a Kowloon hoodie, which, you know, we live in Kowloon merch because, you know, we love them.
Yep.
You know, Top Shelf Cookies.
Yeah.
Is a favorite cookie place of mine. Cause my friend is the owner of the place. You know, but, just some businesses that, if you can, you know, Massachusetts supposedly is opening up soon, but you know, mental health is important. NewtonCenterTherapy.com, Top Shelf Cookies, Phil Castanetti, Sports World, Kowloon. Places like that, they need your support. Wrestlers, Pro Wrestling Tees, their social media page. They just, if you can, and it's a difficult time, there's 33 million people out of work right now, or at least have filed for unemployment. And hopefully most of those jobs come back, but there's no guarantee that they will. So if you can support any of these companies, if you need anything, like, you know, they're out there. You just kind of, you know, they're, support your local alehouse if you can.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not saying that everybody can because maybe you can't, but if you can, it helps them out. I think it helps them out. So that's my public service announcement, which is just selfish and me putting over my friends.
Well, it's nice, though. It's a nice thing to do because people need it at this point here and they need all the business they can get. We don't know the future of everything. Also, a shameless plug. I've been doing a lot of Zoom trivia and music bingo events. If anyone needs that for their sanity level to keep it you know, in a good position for yourself, hire me. I'm happy to help you out and even do a fundraiser for you. SargeSports@gmail.com. That's the email.
Yeah. So there's our shameless plugs to end the evening. But I but just feel like, you know, we have a forum here and we're blessed to have a forum here. And, you know, if we can help out people that are friends of ours, you know, they're family. They really are.
They are.
So if we're, you can just, do that, great. If you can't, then, you know, we get it.
We're just returning the favor. They've been good to us. Now we be good to them. Right?
Yep. Absolutely. That's the way it is. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike, I think next week we're going to have an AEW pay-per-view to preview.
Oh, that's right. Double or Nothing in 2 weeks. That's right.
I think we're going to have some AEW talk on the on the next show. So we'll see how that goes. For Mike Riley, at Sarge985.
Yeah. You want me to do it again?
I just had a total vapor lock there. You know, at Sarge985, my Twitter account's at I am James Stewart. The show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. If you want to email the show, it's WrestleCast985@gmail.com. Next week, we'll talk about AEW and whatever the hell else happens, because thank you, wrestling. We have content. We 100% have contact. So thank you, pro wrestling, for being a mandatory business and, you know, donating $18.5 million to the Trump reelection campaign.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.